Hello, hello, fearless listeners. Are you ready for another episode of Let Fear Bounce? It's the podcast that's all about conquering challenges and facing our fears. I'm your host, Kim Langling, and each week we'll dive into inspiring stories, expert insights, and practical tips to help you turn your fear into your greatest ally. So sit back, relax, grab that cup of coffee, and let's discover how to make fear our bouncing board towards a life filled with endless possibilities right here on Let Fear Bounce. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to another episode of Let Fear Bounce. This is Kim Langling, your host, and I am so happy that you are deciding to spend just a small part of your day with myself today and my guest today, Michelle Quay. She is my special guest this week, folks, and I've really been looking forward to this conversation. She is a distinguished visibility marketing coach and a respected expert in content and email marketing strategies. Mark that down, folks, for all you solopreneurs and entrepreneurs out there. She is also an author of Perfectly Normal, An Immigrant Story of Making It in America. Now, if that title doesn't grab your attention and make you want to hop online and grab yourself a copy of that book, I don't know what does. So be sure you check that out, folks. And she is also the creator of the Profitable Coach Formula Mastermind Program that further illustrates her versatility and dedication to empowering others. Now, she's got all kinds of stuff that she's done in her life, but her career spans significant roles in different sectors, including she was the Secretary of United Nations Association of the USA Pasadena chapter and a clinical pharmacist at USC's Keck Medical Center. That's, you know, that's a different range. There's a wide gap in between those two things. So she's done a lot. She continues to do a lot, but I want her to share her story because there's an awful lot of special things going on that makes this woman so special, and you will feel empowered after you hear her share her story. So Michelle, welcome to Let Fear Bounce.
I am really excited. Oh my gosh, that intro was just incredible. And I would say I'm a multi-passionate woman. And I know a lot of people share that, right? We're so passionate about to like explore little things, discover new adventures. So I'm a multi-passion.
Oh, and I can completely resonate with that comment. Completely. Because there's all kinds of things I love doing. And I like learning about and hearing about. And if I hear something that always makes me, you know, if something makes me go, oh, wow, really? What? Tell me more. You know?
Right. They say curiosity kills the cat. But I think curiosity is what keeps the cat alive.
Well, people say that. And I'm like, but I'm not a cat. So I'm good to go.
I love cat. And I know my cat is always exploring. Great, great job. You know, living the life purpose. And I think it's really, really valuable to be able to open up to the curiosity, to what's going on around the world so that we get a taste of everything.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I'm always saying you got to keep your eyes and your heart open.
Yeah.
Because if you keep them closed off, do you have any idea of what you're missing?
Nope.
You don't want to miss all that stuff, folks, because life is just too dang short.
Yeah. I think at the end of our lifetime, you know, the last thing that people would want is actually spending time thinking about all the things that we didn't do. And that's living in regret. And I think the biggest pain and struggles that anyone can experience is living in that regret. I wish I could spend more time with blank, you know, whatever that blank that you wanted to fill in. Or I wish I can spend more time. Or I wish I can go to this place. I wish I could do this. So we're spending constantly thinking about all the regrets that we have. And that just, to me, it just feels miserable. Like, there's such a different way of seeing life, right, than living in the regret. I wish I had something, but I didn't.
And, you know, wishing your life away is doing you no good. Don't wish it away. Do it. Live your life. Don't wish your life away. Live your life.
Yeah. I think it goes really nicely to the name of your podcast, right? Because it's that fear. What if it doesn't work out? What if I fail? What if I don't succeed? What if something happened to me? There's so many what if, but then we don't think about the other what if? The what if you can be successful? What if it does work? What if you're able to accomplish, right? So it's always like tossing the coin. And I feel there's a saying that life is a gambling and life is a game, right? So I like to see it. And I had collect, this is something that I never shared with other podcasts before, but I collect these chips from the casino table. And the meaning of those chips is that life is a game and you place your bet, your odds on where the winner card is. And depending on how you pick and how you choose, you might have the winner cards or you don't. But you don't know that until you put that chip down and place your odds.
Right. What a good analogy there. Good analogy. Nice little story that you brought to life there. So how many chips do you have?
So far, I have three. Three that are really, really meaningful to me. One of it came from the program, the certification program that I graduated with my coaching certification. It was meaningful because it was a change in, it was a time in my life where I decided to do something differently. I don't want to be the doctors of pharmacy. And, you know, earlier you talked about my bio. I spent 20 years in healthcare profession and it was just a lot of burned out stress and I was not happy with it. It was something that pays my bill, but it was not something that I was passionate about. And so when I finally decided that I was going to, it was after my infamous hike. We'll talk about that later. But I came back from the hike. I was really inspired. I wanted to do more. I wanted to contribute to the world. And I was thinking, how can I be a part of this world and be helpful? And one of the things, it was coincidental that, you know, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine and he brought up life coaching. And so I start looking, I Googled it and I found this certification program. I'm like, okay, I'm all in. And so the minute on the day of the admission, I was talking to the coach and I said, you know, say no more. Here's my card. I'm going to pay my tuition. I'm all in. And I received that chip as a souvenir from the program. And I just kept it because it was a moment that I decided to do something for myself.
Those moments, those pivotal moments, you don't realize how pivotal they are. So you look back and go, I am so glad I did that, you know, or you can look back and you can see those times where you might look at something and consider it a failure, but it really, I've learned over time where I thought I've stumbled or I've failed. It really wasn't a failure. It was a stepping stone to get me to continue me on that forward motion to where I was meant to be. And those stepping stones, nice little segue. I'm going into Machu Picchu here right now. I'm pretty slick that way, aren't I? So I want you to share this journey of you climbing Machu Picchu, but I want you to share with the listeners why that was such a special thing for you.
Well, I think in order to explain the why, I need to kind of go back a little bit in terms of, because right now the listener can't see me, but if I were to stand up, I am four feet, 4 inches tall, and I walk with crutches. I used to walk with two crutches, but because I was doing so much of personal development, working on myself, now I just walk with mostly one crutch for the most of the time. But when I walk long distance, I still use two. And the reason why I'm using two crutches is because I had this major car accident when I was 11 years old. I was crossing the street one day and a taxi came really fast and hit me and pushed me 100 feet away. So by the time I woke up in the hospital, I was pretty much trapped from my waist down to my ankle. I was wrapped with a plaster. So I was sent home for a good amount of time to recover. Luckily, I wasn't paralyzed. I was still able to walk. But then during that process, because it had impacted my growth. So my height froze at 4 feet, 4 inches tall. So I'm in my 50 this year.
Welcome. I'm 50. Welcome. Welcome to the club, dear.
I still look the same height and never grown. And so it was always challenging growing up. And so I was carrying a lot of self-judgment, not happy about my body. I was really doing a lot of body shaming, and I was just having a conversation with someone else that I don't remember having any full body picture during the period of time from my when the accident happened to like a good chunk of my life, 30 years, 20 years. I never took any full body, very, very few full body picture because I just felt that the picture was just shaming me. And so I avoid any opportunity that I could. But then when I got to 40, you know, there's that moment that we talked about earlier, that moment that you decided to do something differently. And it was because I was just so tired of waking up in the morning, feeling sorry for myself. And I had this pity party for my whole entire life that I was just in it the whole time. And when you are in that negative mindset and negative feeling and energy, nothing matters anymore. The life that we experience, it doesn't matter. I was always angry. I always have that resentment towards the people who work with me. And I kept thinking that I was the victim. That people are doing this to me because I am different, right? I'm sure this is why you don't want to hire me for a job. I'm not tall enough. English is not my first language. This is why you always go like, "What are you saying? What are you saying?" And to me, that was such a judgment thing for me to hear. And so I kept questioning and second guessing myself all the time. And when you live that life for the 40 years of time, you start to realize how unhappy you are. And that was not something I want to live. If I were to be able to live to 80, I got another halfway to go. And that is a very, very painful way to live. And so I decided I'm going to change, but I wasn't sure what to do to change. At that time, I was gaining weight. I was putting up a couple of pounds and I started to see my muffin top. Lady out there, you know, I can relate. Trust me. The muffin top that start to, you know, you got to get the bigger jean and your breasts stop closing up, right? All these things that we see on ourselves. And that was the first thing that came to my mind. Oh my gosh, you know, how can I be a little more active so I don't experience this? And so the first thing that I did was I knew I couldn't run. So I thought, well, let me see what if there's any exercise that they do out there, tutorial that they help people with immobility. There has to be something. Someone must be like putting out ideas like that. So I came across Pilates ball, my Pilates ball exercise. So I drove myself out to Target and I got myself a Pilates ball. I started to rocking on it. You know, that was the first thing I did. And that led to something else and something else. And then I decided to sign up to a gym, which never in my life had I stepped into a gym before, let alone knowing how to operate those machines. Because I never thought that I could put down my crutches and walk on the treadmill, at least do some exercise. Never thought of that, just thought about that until I walked into the gym, spoke to the gym owner. I said, "Listen, this is how I am. This is how I look. I need you to help me to be a little more flexible, be more physical. Who do you know can help me?" He showed me his gym, walked me for a tour, and he said, "I can help if you like." So I hired him on the spot, and he started working with me and showed me how to do physical training, how to do you go on to that fitness journey. But I thought I was going on a fitness journey. But then, right, that's what I thought. I thought I was going on to a fitness journey. But then, one thing after another, when you start feeling that happiness, your endorphins start to kick in. You feel empowered. You feel like, oh, okay, so I can do the pull-up. Maybe I can try something else. And that something else led me to booking a ticket by myself, flew myself to Cusco, Peru. And I signed up to hike the 26 miles of Inca Trail to Machu
From that all stemmed from walking in a gym.
A walk into the gym. And you know, a lot of us think about like, oh, I wanted to do these amazing things. Sometimes all it takes is for it's just for you to take that first step. that little tiny step of what you can do today to make a change, to do things differently. And just having that idea of, I want to do things differently, it opens up the door to opportunity of what can come in. So yeah, mine was hiking Machu Picchu, apparently.
Wherever that thought came from.
Right.
Now you've shared so much, and there's so many questions. I take notes as you're chatting. 11 years old is when you went through this, well, it was a tragic accident because it completely changed the trajectory of your life. And I'm assuming that that recovery period was a long journey. How did your family and like close friends, or did you have close friends at that age that you were growing up? How did they support you?
I think I was very optimistic child. You know, growing up, I was always being very optimistic. But I think one of the things that came to my mind just now is that my mom described me as optimistic. But what she doesn't know, and my mom is really close to me, like she went through that whole recovery journey with me and watched me. She was there on the scene when the accident happened, because she was there to pick me up from school that day. And so she went through and watched the whole journey of what I was going through. But her word was, she's very optimistic. You know, she's always very hopeful. But I always felt there's something that was missing. Even the closest person to me didn't pick up. And that was that I didn't want to be optimistic. I want to be able to come home and say, you know, I am not doing well, and I want to cry. Shedding the tear in front of her, my closest mom, right? My mom is really close to me. I couldn't do that. And so I learned to be strong in front of everybody, including my best friends, my closest family members, everyone, including my sister. I have a sister. You know, usually when you have a sister, you're pretty close to your sister for most people. But there's always a boundary. There's always an invisible line where I draw myself from who I truly am versus how they see me. They see this strong, optimistic person, but deep inside, how I really felt was, I am not strong. I am weak. I'm doing this pretend to be strong, to be out there, to be happy all the time. And so I put on this mask for a very, 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 very long time. And vulnerability was not something that came easy for me. Like, talking about my story, not easy.
I can resonate with that statement as well. That pushing everything down because how the world perceives you as positive and strong and optimistic and any other great words they want to use. But then inside, you're just sitting there going, oh my gosh, I just want to scream. I just want to yell. I want to cry. Yeah. I want to crawl in my bed and keep all the lights off for a day or two.
Yeah.
I completely understand what you're saying there. I appreciate you sharing that, because I am positive that there are people out there listening right now that experience the same thing at times, if they're not experiencing it now. And you mentioned the word mask. And I'm often saying, you know, before you walk out the back door on your way to work, every day we put on a mask, because you're not the same person at work as you are at home. And, you know, why can't we be? You know, that's my question for the ages. Why can't we be the same person? Why do we feel so strongly that we have to wear a mask for all these different versions of Michelle or versions of Kim? So I am so thankful that you shared that part of you. Thank you very much. You also had mentioned that keeping this body shame as you got older, you never had a picture of your full body self, and you were body shaming, and you felt, well, you didn't feel great about how you looked. Mm-hmm. And the words that you used were, it's a painful way to live. Describe some of that pain, as you mentioned, painful way to live.
I think it's painful because a lot of time when we're body shaming ourselves, you're trying your very best to not be seen differently. You want to feel normal, right? So when we go out, Like, for example, I used to go out to grocery store, and because I was body shaming, I felt small, but I couldn't tell people that I felt small. And therefore, a lot of time I'm trying to pretend that, oh, you know what? I don't need your help. I can totally do it myself. And I'm trying to prove to the rest of the world, and including myself, that I can do the exact same thing that you do. And I can probably do it better. But in reality, you know, there's a height difference, right? So when I go to a grocery store, there's stuff for whatever reason, right? They put the most important essential stuff that everybody needs on the very top shelf, like toilet paper. So I would go to a store, reaching, looking at the toilet paper, and I couldn't reach it. So in the past, I felt, well, I'll just not get it. I'll just go to a different store and buy it, right? Where I'm sure I'm going to hit a store where they keep things on the bottom shelf instead of on the top shelf. So I'll just go to a different store. So I would go through the trouble of going to multiple stores in order to find the place where I can buy the simplest thing as toilet paper. And that is a lot of, first of all, you it's stress, it's energy, and it's money, right? You have to drive to a different store. But why? You could simply just stop and say, look, you're 5'7" tall. I need you to serve your purpose and grab me the toilet paper
Serve
that's
your
up there,
purpose.
up there on the top, right? Because the world is made of different people, different sizes. We all come different packages. There's a reason for our existence. And when I go through the trouble and putting it upon myself that, you know what, I'm just gonna go home. I'm just gonna take it all in. This is who I am. I feel limited. I feel small, but yet I am not asking. I am not going to ask because how are they gonna judge me? They're gonna see me as I'm someone different. They're going to see me as someone who's not normal. They're gonna give me this eye, like pity, right? It's pity. Don't want that. And so I would avoid it by putting more work on myself. And that's a painful way to live.
And
Why?
tiring. That would be so tiring,
Yes.
mentally and physically, well, and financially.
Right? With the gas price
Right.
nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, tiring and painful. Yeah. I'm so glad that you're a guest of mine because, and you've mentioned several times you've used the word normal. It's what people perceive as normal, but that's only their own perception. Because I look at myself, I'm going, well, I'm not normal. I know I'm not. I'm a goofball. I'm a dork. And I embrace that. I live with PTSD, and that can make some days very difficult. And when you mentioned painful way to live, that really resonated with me because there are certain days where you just want to stay there. And you're like, nah, I don't feel like crawling out today. I don't feel like crawling myself out. I don't want to be positive today, and anger and all of that bitterness. You had mentioned those words as well. But normal. I think you're probably more normal, if there is such a thing, than most folks, because you are recognizing you have in your life what your potential or supposed limitations are. You don't have a whole lot of limitations. You've noticed that you were putting a lot of that on yourself, a lot of that pressure on yourself. And you're more normal than a lot of people I've met. So,
I think what's
there.
interesting, what's really interesting is when I decided on the book and the title, my editor was like, no, you want your book to be selling on the shelf, and when you write the word normal, people's gonna look at it and thinking it differently. I said, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to get people to start thinking about the word normal. And I'm the opposite of, you know, there is normal. I actually think that there is normal. And normal exists just like the tree exists, the grasses, the flowers exist. It's the name or the terminology that our human brain assigned to it for us to understand what does that mean. So we're attaching meanings to a particular word in order for our human mind to understand what does that word mean. But
And
when we do that,
everybody's normal is different.
yes. And so the word normal exists in everybody's world, but how we interpret, how we give that word a meaning is something that's different for everybody. So what's normal for you may not be normal for me, because my definition of normal is something else, something different. And it's based on how I grew up, the culture I was in, the language I speak, and the belief that I have. And so the word normal has nothing. It's innocent. The word normal is
right.
innocent.
Right.
we're giving something so innocent such a hard time.
You're right. I'm glad you clarified that. Thank you.
We're giving a lot of things a hard time nowadays, right? Like, yeah. We're giving ourselves a hard time.
Exactly. Yes. And we all need to stop doing that, by golly. By golly. So you mentioned the book, Perfectly Normal, An Immigrant Story of Making It in America. So when did you immigrate here and where from?
I came to America when I was 15 years old from Taiwan. So I grew up, it's funny, I grew up equal amount everywhere. So currently I'm in Los Angeles, 15 years here in Los Angeles, 15 years in New York, and 15 years in Taiwan.
So I'm in your number.
So number 5 seems to be my lucky number. Yeah.
There you go. Is that what you play when you are at the casinos collecting your chips?
I try, but you know, the universe has bigger plan for us.
Right.
Usually 2 comes out to be the perfect number in casino.
So 15 years old when you came over here from Taiwan. What was the reason you folks, your family immigrated over here?
Well, so Taiwan has always been the hotspot for a lot of the political things that's going on with China. And my parents, my great-great-grandparents immigrated from China to Taiwan during the civil war with China. And so they fled it from China. And now my parents, they're the second generation from China. And we're trying to avoid that whole political situation that was going on. And they wanted to have better education for us. So they're hoping that coming out to US, it would give us, open up the opportunity to better education, also better job opportunity. And so they had, I remember my mom was in her 40s, like right around my age when they came out. And it is not easy to give up everything that you had and start all over again. So I applaud my parents for doing that, because that was not something easy to do, to just give up everything that you had and just pack up and go to a complete strange place that you don't speak in language. So I remember growing up, I always had to translate for them. I'm always their translator. We didn't have dictionary anymore. We didn't have ChatGPT back then.
Right.
So yeah, that's why they,
you know,
came
that's out. That's facing a big, that they had to have experienced numerous forms of fear doing that.
Yeah.
Just making the decision as a family that, you know, we have to leave. That's big. That is huge. And like you said, you applaud your parents for the courage in doing that. I do too, honestly. That's an amazing thing that they did, because they're not only looking out for themselves, but they're looking out for their children's future, their future and their children's future. So you can have a better life. You know, what amazing, you know, an amazing thing.
Yeah. My dad used to work in a school. And so he always had a desk job. He never had to lift anything heavy or do anything with his hand. The only thing that he had to do with his hand is write on the chalkboard, write on with pen, paper and pen. When he came to US, there was no job that was suited for him. He doesn't speak English. So his first job was working at a grocery store, lifting heavy crates. And I remember the first night he came home, his hand was all bleeding and bruised up. And it was memorable to me because I have never saw him that way. He's always like wearing, you know, very suits and very proper, going to work. Never had I seen him coming home bruised and bleeds from lifting heavy crates.
And probably mentally and physically exhausted. And they probably often ask themselves, did we make the right choice?
My dad more so than my mom. My mom is really my role model. She is such a strong woman. Never cry in front of me, even during my recovery period.
That's where you got that from, man. You came by that naturally, dear heart.
So she's really close to me, but like she's a really strong woman, and she took care of my grandparents. She's taking care of my dad now because he's older. She's just such a strong woman.
What a great role model that you've had then. I'm sure that's where you get a lot of your strength from, as well as that, because you said she didn't cry. You never saw her cry.
I never saw her cry.
Right. Yes, because showers are a great place to cry. I did that many times when my daughter was young and the days were just too hard, and that's, cried in the shower and let it all wash away. And then you're like, all right, slap the mask on, start another day. I bet there's a lot of people out there that can resonate with the shower thing too. So your book is out there. When was the book published and where can it be found?
It was published in 2019, so it's been out for a while, and it's available on Amazon. Right now, my website is under construction, but usually I give people the opportunity of request a copy from me, so I can sign it and then send it and mail it to you.
Oh,
So
awesome.
if you write to me, Michelle at elevatelifecoaching.org, and just say you want a author's signed copy, I will make sure to you get a copy and send it out to you.
Awesome. And we will have all those links in the show notes and the description notes, folks. But I came across another website that you have, Crutches to Courage.
Crutches to Courage. Yes, I do a lot of motivational speaking and public speaking. So Crutches to Courage is my speaking website that I have this dream. I have this mission that there has to be somebody out there who is currently experiencing something that I was struggling with. And if my word can encourage you to do one thing differently today, then I came and served my purpose.
Indeed. That's why I'm often, well, part of the title of the show is Let Fear Bounce, Tossing Out Nuggets of Hope. I'm currently writing a book called Nuggets of Hope and the stories of my interactions with people as I'm handing them physical nuggets of hope. So what you're doing is the same thing. When you're out there public speaking in your words, they are those little nuggets that you're tossing out. They're like confetti, and that's an amazing thing. It's also an amazing feeling to realize and to know. And I guess recognize that you're doing what you're meant to be doing. And all the struggles and everything that you went through, not that I'm trying to make any of it small, that was part of your path to getting you to where you're at right now. Because if you hadn't gone through that, you wouldn't be able to be inspirational to ever other people in the way that you do it now, in the way that you are, in the way that you can share that with the world. What else, before we get ready to close out the show here, what else would you like to share with the listeners? I know briefly, share, you, I mean, you traversed a big old mountain, lady. So how long did it take you to do that? I mean, it's amazing, because you do have some physical limitations, some. I don't know how much of it, but it had to have been physically very demanding to do that. So share a little bit about that, how long it took you to get up there and what it, a lot of people might not even know what Machu Picchu is like. So give us a little description about that journey.
So Machu Picchu is one of the seventh wonder of the world, compared to the pyramid Egypt, right? But it took me 4 days to get onto the very top inside the Machu Picchu site, the ruined site. Okay, so 4 days, and each day I would have to hike 10 hours long, and there's nonstop. We break at lunch, dinner, which is you camp outside. And so it took me 10 hours for each day to hike. So I average about 26,000 steps per day. And so those of you who's tracking your steps, you can probably calculate that out. And there's all ascending hills to climb, and there's a lot of stairs. So how big is the stairs? I'm 4 feet 4 inches tall, and the stairs are about half of my size. So in order for me to get up, I would have to lay down my crutches, climb, get down to my knees and hand, climb up to the stairs, and then pick up my crutches and repeat that process. And there's more than 14,000 steps along the way. So each time I do that, it's like one exercise of at a time. So it took me a total of four days to get up there.
What a physically, not for anyone, that would be a physically demanding journey.
So if anybody who wants to lose their muffin top, come with me to Machu Picchu.
Go to Machu Picchu.
There we go. Let's go for a hike.
Now, I read something on, I believe it was on your Crutches to Courage website. Mm-hmm. I was reading on there where your guide said it took you 10 hours. So you either need to turn around and go home, or you need to be faster than the donkey.
Yeah.
I loved that line. You need to be faster than the donkey. And when I read that, I kind of laughed out loud and I thought, I bet you she said to myself, oh, I'm being faster than that donkey. I'm not turning around and going home. So when that was said to you, be faster than the donkey, what was that inspirational to you?
I was devastated because he was about to send me home. And it was after my first day, I was really exhausted, and I was literally walking slower than the donkey. They had donkey carrying the supplies and the store. They have stores, you know, halfway through, and there's a lot of donkey along the way. And all I could see is donkey's back because I was so slow. And at that point, I was devastated because I didn't want to get sent back. I want to continue. And I came this far, didn't to just come this far. I wanted to make it through. So I wasn't thinking about, oh, I'm faster. I can be faster than donkey. I was like, can you please, please, please don't send me home. And that was what's going on in my mind. And I remember I was just crying. I said, please, I didn't come this far to be this far. I want to continue. But the fact that I was slow, he had to give me some more time. So usually people would take about 8 hours to hike. I got 2 extra hours, which means that in the morning, I would get up at 5 o'clock while it's dark, put on my headlight and start hiking. Compared to other people who came from everywhere around the world, their itinerary doesn't start till 7 o'clock. So he bought me 2 hours to give me that extra time so that I can catch up to the rest of the team before it's dark.
And okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But the donkey, I was staring at the donkey's back the whole entire
time. And that's, I was thinking, that's probably a line you'll never forget. You've got to be faster than the donkey.
And I would never forget the scene that I was seeing, the visual of how everybody were passing by me. And there I was struggling, right? That first day I was thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to make this? I won't be able to make it. How can I continue this journey? Can I possibly do it? So again, there was a lot of fear on that first day. I didn't know if I could do it. What if this doesn't work? What if he sent me back? But then as I sat down and he told me that here are your options. And I think this is the golden nugget that I wanted to leave for everyone, is that you're going to find yourself having this opportunity to decide and make a decision on what you want to do with the rest of your life. And I was put in that position where I had to decide. Now, when you decide, things are going to, again, be that 50-50, right? What if it doesn't work? But what if it does? And if it does, what would be different for you? So when you're being put into that position where you had to make a choice, whether it's the choice you put for yourself or a choice asked by someone else, you got to decide. Pick one. Doesn't matter what the outcome is going to be. Because remember, what if it does work? What will your life be differently?
Awesome. Awesome nugget that you just tossed out there. Now I have one last question for you. When you got to the top, what I personally probably would have like been trying to jump up and down and scream if I was physically able to, because I'd done it. What was that feeling for you when you reached the top of Machu Picchu?
I wave. I did the princess wave.
You did the princess wave. To all of your loyal subjects, right?
I did the princess wave, but that moment I had such an inspiration from everyone, like everyone from all around the world who sat down and who were resting. They all stood up, they were clapping, they were cheering me on. They're like, oh my gosh, you made it, and we're here together. And so that togetherness was really strong and powerful to me, because on my journey I never felt I was part of something, and in that moment I felt like I was part of something that we accomplished together. And that was really important to me, because then I realized that I was not alone on this journey. There's people who are experiencing the same thing, who's going through the same thing, but it's just that it doesn't show on them because they're probably doing it inside of them, so I cannot see. But I was not alone on that journey and in this life. So in that moment, I felt the sense of belonging, and I was really inspired. Yeah, even though I did the
Amazing.
princess wave.
Yeah. Yes, and of course the Princess Wave was involved. I have
Yes.
done that myself. I've employed the Princess Wave on occasion myself. I love that. That was the first thing you said. I did the Princess Wave. What an awesome journey. Thank you so much for being my guest and for sharing your words with the listeners. I am sure that they are resonating with so many people out there listening right now, but thank you so much. This has been an absolute blessing and a pleasure to have you as my guest today on Let Fear Bounce.
Thank you so much for having me.
Everybody out there, thanks again for tuning in. Each Wednesday, folks, the new shows are uploaded. This is Kim Langling, your host of Let Fear Bounce. Everybody be well, stay well, and be blessed. Thanks so much for joining me on Let Fear Bounce this week. New episodes upload each Wednesday, folks, so be sure that you subscribe on one of your favorite platforms that you listen on. Also, we're on YouTube, so hop on over to YouTube, folks, and subscribe there. I appreciate your support, and I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you. You are amazing. Have a beautiful day. Everybody be well, stay well, and be blessed.